Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
I'm flying blind. I don't like this. I don't have any outline or notes in front of me. Jonathan will not give me the notes on the day that we have listener questions because he wants to test my spontaneity. He wants to test my adeptness, my quickness, my mental dexterity after getting just a couple hours sleep. And he wants to see if I can answer these questions well. We'll see. I love listener questions. It's one of the really, really one of the fun things that we do on this podcast. And what episode is this, by the way?
It is episode 431.
So episode 431 is about to be one of my favorite episodes. And speaking of favorite, one of my favorite institutions of higher education, theological education, is Midwestern Seminary.
Yes, and their flagship degree program, the MDiv, is their primary track for ministry preparation. At just 81 hours, the Midwestern Master of Divinity degree offers a complete foundation for full-time ministry leaders, offering everything you need and nothing you don't. Join other students in vibrant Kansas City as you train in a unique collaborative environment focused on the local church or study online in your current ministry context. Midwestern Seminary is developing a discipleship culture devoted to the local church and committed to God's unchanging word. Start your training today at mbts.edu/mdiv.
You and I have been doing more traveling than usual lately.
Kind of hit all at once.
Yeah, but you know what? It's made me appreciate more our listeners.
Yeah. They come up and talk to us.
They come up and talk. I'm looking at the two Amys here in case y'all don't, in case on a podcast you can't see which way I just turned.
They can't.
I got Amy's on my left, but Amy's on my right.
Uh-huh.
And
mine too.
Wow. And they'll come up to us and they'll start talking to me and, oh, how much I love the podcast. And they'll just go on and I say, you know, that guy over there is Jonathan, the voice. And his bald head turns red every time. He says, oh my gosh, don't do that. And they're, didn't somebody want a photo with you yesterday?
Or they wanted to shake my hand.
Yeah,
Boy, you need and then, some higher goals in life.
They want to meet the voice. They said, I knew what Rainer looked like because I've seen his photos, but I didn't know what the voice looked like. And so now they have an embodiment to the voice, and they're kind of excited. So I always appreciate our audience, always appreciate the fact that how many years we've been doing this? Lots of years.
The podcast?
Yes.
I think we're starting year six.
That's incredible.
I believe.
And we started off at one April. A week, yeah. and now we're at two a week.
I think this is year six.
And we are just hurrying right along.
It's crazy.
Wow. I am going to celebrate. What number is this again?
431.
I don't have my notes in front of me. I'm going to celebrate 431, and we're going to do 432 after this one today.
That's typically how it goes.
I know, but we're going to do it today.
Yes, we are.
So after 432, I'm going to go celebrate with a pint of Halo Top ice cream. Just thought I'd let you know. I'm looking forward to it. It's the only kind that my dad allows me to eat, so I am looking forward to it. All right, Jonathan, I have no idea. How many questions are we?
Well, you don't. I got six.
We may get through them all.
Usually I do about six on these.
Okay.
So we'll get through them all. And these people get books. They get your two new ones.
Oh,
we want you here and becoming a welcoming church.
Very good.
Both available at lifeway.com in bulk orders, and there's a church kit too.
Yeah, there is a church kit. I discovered that recently. And just this would not be humble brag. This would just be brag. I am grateful that both books, their first month, hit the bestseller list. And so one at 25 and one at 35 in the first month. So that's pretty good stuff going on there.
Yep.
All right. Question number one, Jonathan.
Is from Justin. Says, I pastor a – this is a great question.
They
all are. But anyway. So this is from Justin. He says he pastors a church of about 60 folks. They're a slow-growing church, but they feel they aren't that unhealthy. I mean, they're a pretty healthy church. There's a church of about 20 in attendance that has bounced around between multiple rental sites the last 7 or 8 years. He's thinking about approaching the pastor and asking if they would entertain the idea of the churches merging. Says their style of worship and doctrine are pretty close in line. Is there any advice that you could give him? Is it a terrible idea? He just wants to see the churches grow faster and combine their efforts.
In the old days, Justin,
is that right?
In the old days, Justin, mergers were a big no-no because you'd typically take two dying churches and merge them and you'd have one dying church. And then it would completely die. And when I say the old days, I'm saying 20 years ago, 25 years ago. Mergers are more in favor these days because there are strategies that are out there. We have another podcast called Revitalize and Replant, and we talk about a lot of those strategies that are there. So here's the caution that I would give Justin in the midst of all this. First, Yes, I would pursue. I would talk about it. You got one church that's struggling that needs a building. You got another church that's fairly stable that has a building. It might be good. But the real big issue is anytime you do a merger, you never end up with two churches. You end up with one church. And one personality is going to dominate over the other.
Yeah.
So it might be Justin's church. One church tends to have its identity subsumed by the other. Mm-hmm. You need to be prepared for that. And you need to be honest with the church that you're approaching, the church of 20 that's floating from place to place about how this might happen.
Yeah.
I would pursue, but I would give all the information on the front end about what could happen.
I just kind of wonder if there will be that much gain by adding a church that's been around 7 to 8 years that's still averaging just 20 people.
Sounds like he's thinking.
That may be a harsh question. But
but you're a harsh person.
Oh, thanks.
There might be something to be gained just by giving them a place.
That's possible.
Yeah.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
It's worth pursuing with the caveats that both of us have mentioned.
All right. The next two kind of are 2A and 2B, if you will, because they kind of feed into each other. That's why I put them in the order they're in. This is from Barb.
Who?
Barb.
Barb. Okay.
Her last name is Ryan Barb.
Oh.
Okay. And no, you, it's not.
I'm not hearing well today. I thought you said B-A-R-F, and that's why I'm saying
Nope, that is not her name. Barb.
Barb.
You have a wonderful name.
Yes, I like Barb. Barbara.
All right. So her pastor feels it's not biblical to employ basic business principles in the church, in church planning or administration. At some point, isn't sound business practice part of basic stewardship? We don't become more spirit-led by making poor choices in how we spend funds or how we do basic planning functions. It doesn't feel honoring to God to make poor business choices that hurts the church financially. So should business principles be a part of church administration?
Yes, the tail should not wag the dog. And
so the church shouldn't follow like
business principles should not be the goal.
Yes.
But business principles can be good stewardship. And if I were talking to her pastor, I would say, when you go in, do you have electricity? You know what? It is a business principle that you actually put a deposit down, they pay their bills monthly in order to have electricity. That sounds like, oh, well, everybody does that. That's a business issue. And then you start getting into strategy and planning and into all the...
you have a weekly schedule. That is a business principle.
I think that this does come back to stewardship. A lot of business principles are all about good stewardship. I think the objection that the pastor has is when you let the secular guide the sacred. And in this case, I would say, look, use the principles for God's glory. I think Jethro really did with Moses. He just said, hey, son-in-law, you're not organized very well. Let's organize this incredibly well. Go to the New Testament in Acts 6. The widows were being overlooked in the daily distribution of food. What did they do? Yeah, they equipped the seven. We understand that the seven were equipped to do the ministry. But what else did they do? They organized them to look after the Hellenistic widows and the Hebraic widows. So throughout Scripture, these so-called business principles are used. I understand the resistance because you can act like a secular organization instead of a church. Don't let the tail wag the dog, but let's mix all kind of metaphors.
Okay.
Don't let the tail wag the dog, but don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Wow, that's a lot of mixed metaphors.
I'm tracking with you.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to go deeper.
Actually, it's dual metaphors. They're not mixed. Yeah. They were metaphorically sound, but we did put
don't throw the baby out with the dog.
Yes. Don't let the baby's tail wag the... Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's mixing metaphors.
My wife is the best at mixing metaphors. I wish I could record every one that she's done over time. And then when I tell her she does, she just laughs at herself.
Oh, well. All right. Well, we're going to dive deeper, though, on business principles here.
All right.
This question from Kat. So two female questions today. All right.
As in Catherine?
Yeah, it is in Catherine. When are employee performance reviews and appraisals appropriate for the church? Should new hires, regardless of their position, be hired on a probationary status? And if they don't make it past that, be let go? Should old employees and have their performance evaluated routinely as well? Is there a perception that church employees are given more leeway in their job performance compared to other secular industries? Is the standard not the same? Is it possible that churches hire people even if they aren't the most qualified or skilled because they can do an okay job and that's all the church can afford?
There's a lot of questions there.
Yeah, that's loaded beyond bear.
Let's unpack it just a little bit. The essence of what Kat is asking is, are we lowering the bar for church employees?
Basically, that is
on the hiring in, on the reviewing in, on the evaluation in.
Do we not hold them to the same standard you would be held in a secular employment?
And the answer is more often than not, yes.
Yeah,
more often than not, yes. And why is that? Because we have the view that, we are a Christian organization, and therefore we're not going to really tell someone when they're doing a terrible job. We're not going to talk to someone when they have a poor work ethic. We're not going to hold people accountable to the type of work that they do. Not all churches have those low standards, but many churches do. And therefore, they have it on the hiring function. This person really just needs a job. We think we'll let them do it. How about qualifications? The Christian thing to do
is they can learn.
Just to give them a job. This person is supposed to work 40 hours a week, but he's given us about 15. Should we say anything? No, don't do that, because that's just not the Christian thing to do. I agree with the premise that in many of our churches we have lowered the bar, and I think that it's a travesty, because if there's any type of organization that should be held to a higher standard, it should be the church, and stewardship should be even more vital. So Kat, I would say, yeah, there should be performance reviews. Now, that's a whole different category of how do you do those. I'm not the type of person that likes to just sit down and say, let's checklist all the things. I like the ongoing review process where you're constantly talking to someone, what are your goals, what are you doing here, and how are you doing, rather than let's just sit down and check off. I think we have annual reviews here at Lifeway, and I just kind of sign them because I feel like I'm having ongoing conversations. But my point is, we have to hold people accountable. And it comes to the issue of, should we delete a job? Should we let someone go? It's a tough question.
Do we really need this job? I think that's a lot of churches, I think, wind up in that spot.
Yeah.
Where they've got people on staff that they really don't need. Do you need, an associate youth guy whenever you're running 40 people in youth?
Yeah.
Or do you need an assistant music person whenever you don't have the choir anymore, or I don't know what it may be.
And how many instrumentalists should you pay or should you not pay? The list is endless there. I do think her point is well made, and I do think that churches need to look more closely at that, because we're being held to higher accountable of stewardship. Look, there are all kind of parables out there about stewardship, and we could get very biblical on you like this, but I'm afraid that we have a lot of churches that have the one talent and they're burying it.
Mm.
So that's what I see what's going on.
But again, kind of tying back to the previous point, don't let the tail wag the dog on this.
Yeah.
Where you're just hard line, running people through the mill there at the church.
If there is a healthy business organization, it actually can be a model for a church. If it's an unhealthy business model, it will not be. So that goes back to our previous question.
All right. Next question's from Eric. This is a great question. I love this question.
Eric Geiger?
No. I don't know. I don't think so, though.
Okay.
What are some ways to keep ministries united as one so that one ministry does not get to a point where they're doing their own thing, making that ministry seem separated from the rest of the church?
Eric Geiger. Simple Church.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Eric Geiger, also a guy by the name of Rainer's name, is on that book. Here's my recommendation to you. Go read Simple Church, because Simple Church is about alignment. Simple Church is not just about eliminating ministries, which many people took the book to be. It is about aligning everything to a common vision. And therefore, once you have alignment, everybody should be working together and not separately. And I know in many cases that's more theoretical than actual, but alignment is key in churches. Many times we have student ministries that go in one direction, children's ministries that go in the one direction, pastor going another direction. We don't even know where the pastor's going in a particular direction. One of the key things that church leadership should do is say, what is our vision? And how are we accomplishing our vision with the ministries? And when you say, how are we accomplishing them? How are they aligned together? In most churches, most is a vague word, but in most churches, I would say that the ministries are disparate, they are separate, they are siloed, and they're not working together. Once again, that's poor stewardship. I do recommend Simple Church as a good guide to alignment of ministries.
All right. Fascinating question coming up here. So we have a young church plant, just 3 years, and we have a number of families who have certain educational preferences in the church, how they're educating their kids.
Okay.
I said, from the onset, it appears that most of these families are looking for a place to circle the wagons and raise their children outside of the world's influence. So they're looking kind of like
isolationism.
Yeah. All right. So the resulting culture has kind of subtly become exclusive as they see their primary calling their educational choices rather than the mission of the church. So how do we, you know, deal with this inside the church where you've got a group of people that really want the church to be isolationist, but we know the church is supposed to go make disciples, bring people in?
I think you need to deal with more the big issue than the symptom. The symptom, who's the...
Oh, this is from Tim.
Tim, you didn't say that, did you?
I don't think I said... Sorry, Tim.
Tim, the symptom is the type of ministry that is taking place. It is not the issue. I think that Tim may be saying the issue is that this family that wants to, or families that want to come together and have this protectionism, isolationism, and educate their children in a certain way, and that's become the focus. That is a symptom. The greater problem is very simply a lack of outward focus. That type of symptom can manifest itself in different ways, and here it's a group of families that are looking inwardly on how they train their kids. It could be we have ministries that only take care, ministries, quote unquote, air quotes, that only take care of those inside the church. We have activities that are only for us. Mm-hmm. All of this is about an inward focus. The solution is obviously the other way. The more that you can get those individuals an outward focus, or the more you can lead the whole church to an outward focus, which is going to be one of my major themes from the next few months going forward, the more that you can do that, the more that you can take that ministry and make it something beyond just this holy huddle that it has become. So you're dealing with a symptom, deal with the cause. The cause, if the church is, I just have a sense that the church is not as outwardly focused as it could be. I could be judgmental on that, and I could be wrong, but Tim, that's
well,
my assumption.
Well, from the information we have, we don't really know.
That's exactly right.
So get them to help focus the church more outwardly.
And get them to come up with solutions.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Then they'll have investment and they'll have buy-in
and it'll take
involvement.
It'll get them out of their holy huddle and their spiritual navel-gazing.
Yes. All right. Final question. This one's from Carl. He says, should the size of the pastor's family be a reason for his salary or his personal package to be different than another person or another pastor that has fewer children? So one pastor has two children, another has six. They both have the same responsibility. Maybe one comes after another, you know, when they come into the church. But should they have different packages and salary packages based on their family size?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. That'll do it for today.
No. Look, people should go into – every person should be paid fairly according to his or her responsibility. Okay? So that's the first premise. That has nothing to do with how many kids you have or whether or not you are a single person.
Or whether you're a male or female.
Sometimes it's the female that gets the lower salary just because she is a female. There's another scenario that often plays out on this, and it's not only the size of the family, but is the spouse working or not?
Yeah.
Oh, if the spouse would work, we wouldn't have to pay as much. We need to encourage, you know, that spouse can work.
They've got a good job, so we don't have to pay them as much.
That is ludicrous.
That's garbage.
All of those things are wrong. You should pay fairly according to what God has just said that you should structure the church. And I know that's you can get a lot of ways that God says, but I'm just talking about how you have been led for that particular position for that particular time. Family size, how many, whether mom or dad or both are working or not, all of those issues, even oh, this person has a lot of debt. They came in with a lot of student debt and whatever.
That one kind of surprises me the most out of any of them. That would be a consideration on how much you pay somebody.
I've heard them all.
I've never heard that one.
I have absolutely.
So a Lifeway compensation study, that'll help.
Yes.
Because that takes a lot of these factors out.
So we got a link to Lifeway compensation study here, and you can look at that. So yeah. I hope that is helpful, and you know, get the right people on the bus. That's just one of the main things that we need to do. I used a Colin S. phrase, pay them accordingly. And if you need some help getting the right staff people, then go to Vanderblumen.
Yeah, Vanderblumen Search Group helps churches and ministries build great teams by finding their key staff. But they also have a lot of resources built around team building. Their newest addition is the Culture Tool. It's a free comprehensive staff engagement survey to help you build, run, and keep a great team. You can find out more at theculturetool.com. That is theculturetool.com from Vanderblumen Search Group. Thanks again for joining us here today on Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
So we were in Lawton, Oklahoma, as the
on purpose,
as the navigation system was saying.
Lawton.
No. It's Lawton. It is Lawton. And did you notice on the trip over there, I had on my Vandersocks.
You did.
Yes, I wore. Ooh, you've got your Vandersocks on today.
Yeah.
Love
totally them. Coincidental.
Love my Vandersocks. Thank you for the questions. Thank you, Vanderblumen. Thank you, Midwestern. Appreciate you, listeners. Y'all are really, really the reason that we're doing what we're doing. Have a great day.
Yeah, and if you want to have your question answered on a future episode of Rainer on Leadership, go to the Rainer on Leadership page at tomrainer.com and submit that in the form there on the page. So it's also linked in the show notes for every episode. You can go to that page, put your question in, and if we answer your question on the podcast, you will get a copy of Dr. Rainer's two new books, Becoming a Welcoming Church and We Want You Here. Thanks again for joining us here today on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and in your favorite podcasting app. And join us online at tomrainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.